Rosenberg?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning to you all. My name is Jeffrey Rosenberg. I represent the plaintiff appellant ShuffleTech International, Inc.
How big is ShuffleTech?
ShuffleTech is fairly small. It has a few employees, but its main product is the card shuffler.
How big is it in annual revenues?
The annual revenues are very small at this point. They're still trying to patent and obtain distributors for their ShuffleTech machine.
So that's all they make, the ShuffleTech machine?
They make card shuffling machines. They have sold some in the past, but not a tremendous amount, Your Honor.
But you don't know how large the company is, what its sales are?
I do not know its gross sales this year, Judge.
Excuse me?
I do not know its gross sales this year, Judge.
What was it last year?
I honestly don't know.
No, any year. Okay, that's fine.
It's looking to the future.
That's right. Well, looking in the future is you're not going to make a lot of friends this way, are you?
Well, I think we have. The point of this case was the attempt to enter into a distributorship agreement. And that's what ShuffleTech tried to do with Wolf. Before I get there, let's summarize this issue before you, which is, pursuant to plaintiff ShuffleTech's motion for summary judgment and defendant's Rule 60 motion, the district court granted the defendant a judgment in the amount of $125,000 solely because an ad damnum clause in plaintiff's complaint.
Yeah, solely because. So I'm just wondering, what will your customers think of you when you fight about giving the money back when you'd agreed to give it back?
I think there's a very good distinction there, Judge. We pled and agreed to a contractual obligation to return the $125,000. That's what we wanted the district court to acknowledge, and that's what we admitted we agreed to all along. And as the records show, Judge, we offered to return that money multiple times during the course of the relationship. The defendant continually refused. At some point, the defendant's conduct made it relinquish its right to that $125,000. ShuffleTech was damaged by millions of dollars, Judge. Once these shuffling card machines are patented and a distributorship is found, ShuffleTech has the likelihood of making millions of dollars. And because of this dispute with the defendant, we were prohibited from making those millions of dollars. That was our breach of contract claim. This is a completely different claim. This simply says, we asked the district court, find that there is no distributorship agreement, which the court did, and the only term that ShuffleTech has, the only obligation that ShuffleTech has to the defendant, is this contractual obligation to pay back $125,000. There is a world of difference between a contractual obligation, an actual liability, and a judgment.
I don't see the difference.
Between a contractual... Well, Judge, there are multiple... The district court actually addressed that exact same issue, which is there are multiple affirmative defenses to a contractual obligation. ShuffleTech raised those affirmative defenses in response to defendant's actual claim for those amounts. The defendant brought a counterclaim for the exact same $125,000 that we are talking about today for unjust enrichment. The district court denied that claim, saying that ShuffleTech was not unjustly enriched and denied the defendant's claim for that $125,000. The district court erred both substantially and procedurally. Procedurally, a Rule 60 motion, adding a judgment out of nowhere to a claim, that is a motion to alter the judgment under Rule 59. The defendant missed that 28-day deadline, so it tried to backdoor it with a Rule 60 motion. The Rule 60 motion to correct. I don't understand.
You wanted the judge to hold that the draft agreement was not an enforceable contract, and that your only obligation was to refund the $125,000. So she agreed. It's not an enforceable contract. So all you and doesn't it follow that therefore you refund the $125,000 and you're out of the contract?
Your Honor, wouldn't you agree that there are multiple contracts that come before this court every day?
I don't understand. I don't understand anything you're saying. It seems so obvious. You wanted to rescind. You wanted the agreement wiped out. And, of course, you'd have to give back the $125,000. So,
well, let me ask you a question.
She would never have given you the judgment without your agreement. If you had said, oh, thank you, Judge, and by the way, if you dissolve the contract, oh, we're not giving back that $125,000.
Let me ask you a
question. You wouldn't get a judgment, right?
If the defendant...
You wouldn't get a judgment, right?
We would have got...
No judgment. If you told the judge, we want a dissolution of the contract, and we want to keep our $125,000, you're not going to get a judgment.
I think what the judge mentioned...
you're not going to get a judgment, you're not going to get a judgment.
I respect
you answer it. My question.
I think
you tell
have.
The judge, I want the contract dissolved,
right.
And I will not give back the $125,000. She won't give you judgment.
That would have been a bizarre cause of action to bring, I would admit, Judge. That would have, if we would have sought that at the time, it would have needed to be litigated. And in fact, I can ask you a question. If the defendant, as it should have, brought a claim for breach of contract asking the $125,000 back, that's how this case should have gone down. The defendant should have brought a claim for breach of contract.
Where in the complaint do you state that your only obligation to repay the funds was at the time before the lawsuit was filed? Didn't you use the present tense and ask for a declaration regarding what your obligation is?
We asked for what our
obligation is.
Is under the terms of the contract. Absolutely. And we're saying we now have a defense to those contractual terms. For example, if the defendant brought a breach of contract clause, even though we admitted it was a binding term, that does not end the question right there, does it?
That's very bizarre.
Doesn't the question continue? Doesn't the case continue?
No.
The defendant brings a breach of contract. The court finds, yes, it's a binding term. The next question is, did the defendant, which should have been us in that instance, did the defendant breach that term? Does the defendant have affirmative defenses for that term? All of those issues would need to be decided. A court simply deciding, yes, it's a binding contractual term, does not end the issue. Isn't that true?
Well, you've raised technicality to new levels.
It's a typical litigation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rosenberg. Mr. Ordow?
Good morning, Your Honor. Peter Ordow for Wolf Gaming. I think the court has hit it on the head. I think, frankly, this case, you don't need to be a lawyer to see the fairness of the simple issue that's involved here, which is they went to the court and said, we want you to declare that our only obligation is to refund the money. They admit the obligation, they admit the agreement, and they ask the court to do it. So the court does it, and then they say, there's an error, we never meant to ask for that in the first place. They did ask for that in the first place. Opposing counsel said it would be a very bizarre cause of action for them to bring to say to the court, we don't want to refund anything. That happens all the time. They could have simply asked for a judgment that we don't owe anything to Wolf Gaming. They chose not to do that. And that was pointed out by Judge Bucklow in her order. I think they are bound absolutely by what they asked the court to do. They asked for that in the complaint. They asked for that in the three amendments to the complaint. They asked for that for 2 years through the entire summary judgment process. And then when they got it, they said, well, we didn't really mean it, Judge. I don't think there's any excuse to get around it. I think Rule 60 absolutely says that the court can...
60A or B?
I think either one of them. I think 60A is the easier one to rely on.
Do you think that's what the judge did here, that she used 60A to clarify the earlier judgment?
I can't say that because the judge didn't say that, Your Honor. But I think under 60A, the rule allows an amendment for oversight or omission. Under 60B, it allows it for any reason that justifies relief. Under either of those, I think that the order is sustainable. I think clearly that the order that Judge Bucklow granted said she didn't understand what the ambiguity was in the first summary judgment order she entered, and clearly she indicated that she thought she was communicating that she was granting the summary judgment as to all of the relief that, that Shuffletech had asked for, which was a declaration that we owe the money. And so I think it's certainly consistent with 60A to assume that she amended the order to correct what was simply an oversight or omission in the way that she expressed her ruling. But it also, as Judge Posner says, it's sort of common sense that when you've asked to refund the money and you grant it, then that's the relief that you're getting, and so it's also justified under 60B.
Do you happen to know how large Shuffletech is?
I don't know. We asked for financial records in the course of the case, and the magistrate denied us access to those records. We do know that the deal they made called for a license fee upfront of $500,000 from another company, and that they acknowledged that it had been paid, and that they are supposed to get $2,000 per shuffler out of this. I can also say that they claimed in their complaint and in their motion for summary judgment and in the court today that they lost millions on this deal, supposedly. So I'll take them at their face value that this is a deal worth millions of dollars, and they don't even want to refund our $125,000.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Orta.
Thank you, Arthur.
So, Mr. Rosenman, your time expired, but if you have anything further, you can have
I guess I'll just summarize my two points, which is, number one, procedurally, under Rule 60, this goes far beyond a Rule 60 motion. I think defendants acknowledge that, but they try to backdoor it by filing a new motion to alter judgment after the final judgment in this case, conveniently without any reference to a rule. This was a Rule 60 motion, and that is a very limited circumstances for relief, and this went way beyond it.
Does this go way beyond?
This was adding a judgment that was never litigated.
But we
and
know
never
that
for.
If this matter had been brought to the judge's attention, she would have put the $125,000 into the judgment.
Your Honor, I thought about your question. We should have initially asked the judge to rule that we didn't owe the $125,000, and we would have won that claim because we have so much evidence as to the bad faith.
Claim than you made, though. Your claim
right.
was that your only obligation is to refund the $125,000.
Nobody made that claim, Your Honor. Nobody said, we didn't say we don't owe it, and they didn't say we do owe it.
Read your complaint differently than that, and mm-hmm. I do too.
Well, they did bring that claim. They brought a claim for unjust enrichment, claiming that we owed them the $125,000. The judge denied that claim for very good reasons, because we weren't unjustly enriched. We suffered greatly because of their conduct.
You acknowledge the obligation.
We acknowledged a contractual term.
Well, what's the difference? I mean, if you'd been cheated out of it, you wouldn't have acknowledged that you had a contractual obligation.
Oh, I disagree, Judge. We have multiple commercial cases where we agree that the commercial agreement has been entered, and the other side, the defendant, for multiple reasons, isn't entitled to the benefit of that term, because that's what affirmative defenses are. Latches, estoppel, waiver, non-performance.
So you were attacking the validity of that provision in the contract about the 125?
The validity was okay, but their conduct prohibited them from enforcing that term.
And that's in your complaint?
We never sought a declaration that we didn't owe them the $125. Mm-hmm. If we had, that's what we would have done. But we never asked the judge to say, please rule we don't owe them that money. We never asked the judge that. We simply were waiting. We defended the unjust enrichment claim by saying...
Well, but the judge said plaintiff's only obligation was to refund $125,000.
That was our only contractual obligation.
But she thought it was an obligation. She didn't think it was an obligation voided by fraud or whatever you want to accuse.
It's because it was never litigated, Judge. That issue was never litigated. That's the unfairness of that situation.
So you want to litigate it now. You want another lawsuit.
That's the last thing I want, but that is the only way that they should be entitled to this.
So you're willing to have a lawsuit over the $125,000?
Well, we have a judgment against us for an unfair judgment for $125,000.
So you want to litigate that?
If they want to bring a breach of contract, as they should for that, then we'll be forced to litigate it. But we know we don't owe that money.
You'll fight.
We know we don't
owe... And what is it? And it's invalid. Why? What did you say? Why is it invalid?
waiver, estoppel, unclean hands, bad faith. We raised all these affirmative defenses in our response to their counterclaim for unjust enrichment. This claim has already been litigated. That's another big issue here. They sought $125,000 from us. The Judge Buckler ruled, no, you don't get the $125,000. It wasn't until later that the judge thought this case was over.
No, they didn't get the $125,000 because they had to give up the contract.
Judge did not. That was not raised, and that was not mentioned.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
Both counsel. And court will be in recess until 2:15 this afternoon.